Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll not only learn something new in this podcast, but also find yourself challenged and inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back from getting your work to work. My favorite people in the world are fiercely independent, and nothing classifies today's guest more than that. Goff is a legally blind filmmaker from Australia and the mastermind behind Beer Nuts Productions, Australia's most exciting and innovative production company. His mockumentary comedic short films have touched on a variety of topics, from landing your dream job to the environment. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, Goff shares about his latest film, How to Treat Women, along with insight into the rules of comedy, the power of long takes, his Hawaiian shirt phase of life, and the psychology of stunt performers. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/384. Let's get into it.
You're legally obliged to tell me, so it's been told.
That's right. That'll be next mockumentary. Goff, welcome back to Getting Work to Work. Let's hope this interview is better than Star Trek V, since this is the fifth time you've been on the show.
Well, I mean that's a lot of hype to live up to. So, I mean, I can only try my best. That's all I can do. You know, there's no promises. All I can do is try.
So what made you laugh this morning?
What made me laugh this morning?
Yeah.
Well, crikey. Actually, I'll tell you what does make me – so I go to the gym every morning. It's more for my mental health than anything else. I go to the gym every morning.
Nice.
And on a Tuesday, I do a Les Mills body pump class, which – if your listeners would know, apparently it's supposed to be for women, but I think that's very sexist and outdated sort of a stereotype. And I like doing it. And the pump instructor, she's hilarious because she's like the Joan Rivers of exercise, because she'll just insult everybody. It's one of the funniest. Like, I go there mainly for her entertainment, you know. And so this morning, oh man, this just makes me laugh. This tickled me like nothing else. So this morning, she says, right, we're going to do the shoulder track. And at the start of the shoulder track, there's only 8 push-ups. So I expect everybody to do them on their toes. I want proper on-your-toes push-ups. Don't disappoint me. You don't want to disappoint me, so don't disappoint me. And so there's a guy who always goes as well called Richard standing in the corner of the room. So the track is not even 3 seconds in, and she says, Richard, you're such a disappointment. And I lost my shit. I was laughing so hard. The timing of it, like, I mean, he could barely have got one push-up up before she said, Richard, you're such a disappointment. Oh, man, I laughed. But she is. She's like the Joan Rivers of exercise. She just insults everybody. I love her. She's fantastic.
Now, are you the only one laughing, or is the whole class just losing it?
No, it's usually maybe me and one or two others, and everybody else is far too serious, which makes me laugh even more because they're all devoid of a sense of humor. So I think that's one of the reasons why she does it as well, is because, like, there's two or three of us that think it's all very hilarious and everybody else is all very serious and stern. So I think that sort of just eggs her on even more, which I like. I like that kind of attitude, you know, because I'm that kind of person. Like, if there's a situation, like a quiet, very serious situation. I'll give you an example, okay? This happened about 6 months ago. This is great. So my mate's getting married, okay? And he's a really great guy, Andrew. Super nice. That's why I'm saying his name, so he won't sue me, because he's a nice guy, right? He's a cool dude. I like him. He's a nice fella. So he's getting married. So he says, come to my Bucks party. I'm like, great, we'll have some fun. Who doesn't like a good Bucks party? So I attend his Bucks party, and his mates, it was only like 5 other lads, and his mates are the most boring bunch of nerds I've ever met. Like, again, nice people, mm-hmm. not saying they're not nice people, but they are just nerds. Every, like, the only two topics of conversation was computers and cars. That's all they knew.
Were they
if it
getting
wasn't
coffee?
About computers and cars, they got nothing to offer, right? So I'm sitting, and I know nothing about either one of those two subjects, by the way. I'm just like, so I'm sitting there and I'm going, so I thought to myself, because again, I do things just to amuse me, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there and I haven't spoken for like 20 minutes. And in my head, I'm going, I'm just going to wait till a lull in the conversation and then I'm just going to slip something in there and see how it goes down, right? So sure enough, the conversation dies down to a lull. And I just come out, no lead up, I just come out with, how many dead hookers can you fit in your garage? Two more if I move my bike. It's fair to say they were reasonably stunned by such behavior. Oh. And so it all went very quiet. There was no laughter. All went very quiet for about 5 or 10 seconds. And then one of the guys just looks at me and goes, you must have a large bike. I'm like, I like you. You're fun. All right. You've redeemed yourself with that line. We're good to go. So that's just a long-winded version of my life. That's how I live my life. I just do things to amuse me, and hopefully others will come along for the ride. So people who also live their life in that way, like my pump instructor, for example, I'm a big fan of, because I like that sort of shenanigans and tomfoolery.
Yeah. Ooh, great words. Well, for the listeners who haven't listened to our other four interviews, conversations, whatever you want to call them, Beer Nuts Productions is Australia's most exciting and innovative production company. What else should people know about you and the fine people at Beer Nuts Productions?
Well, I wouldn't say fine. We're a bunch of outlaws and crooks, let's be honest. But but no, look, yeah, like you said, Beer Nuts Productions, we're an Australian production company. We predominantly do films, and obviously we've got the new film out, which I'm sure we'll chat about in a minute, but we've also got audio downloads, a couple of books. Basically, if it's entertainment in nature, we make it and distribute it. So we're completely independent, which means mm-hmm. that obviously there's no third-party involvement, so I've got nobody saying to me what we can and can't produce, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we've done 18 films. Nice. So the last one, obviously, How to Treat Women, is our 18th film. And most of them are comedy-based. That's our main sort of genre. And like I say, we've done 10 audio downloads and 5 books as well. So there's tons up on the – and it's all direct download as well. So it's different, again, in that regard. So we produce our own material and then distribute our own material purely off the Beer Nuts Productions website, which is a little bit of a different kind of business model, but mm-hmm. it seems to work for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you make primarily comedies. And so what are the essential elements of great comedy? I mean, you've mentioned a couple of things about, you know, like deadpan reactions and perfect timing. But, you know, what else goes into a great comedy?
At its essence, in my opinion at least, comedy is the art of surprise, because that's what gives the laugh, because yeah. you're saying something that somebody is not expecting, and therefore that is funny, and that causes the reaction. So it's the art of surprise is essentially what comedy is. With that said, I suppose when I'm writing a script, I just look to what makes me laugh personally and then hope that others also share my opinion. There are other rules involved with comedy. Mm-hmm. For example, the rule of three. So whenever you hear an old school joke, you know, like, you know, an Englishman, an Irishman and a Scotchman walk into a bar, there's always three. Or if somebody is walking into a shop, it will always happen three times before you get to the punchline. So there's the rule of three as well, works into comedy as well. So there are a few little rules when it comes to writing and performing comedy. And like you say, timing is obviously key. So when we're making our films and I'm directing my actors, obviously timing is something that I'm really, really focused on, because otherwise a joke can absolutely be ruined if it's not, you know, timed and delivered correctly.
That's right. Well, and what's interesting is, especially in your latest film, you do long takes.
Yes. Yeah, so again, see, I'm a fan of that for a couple of reasons, and it might have something to do with my disability. So I actually can't see very well. I'm legally blind. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer in that when someone's delivering a line, the other actor is equally important because their facial expression can get just as big a laugh as what the actual line of the actor is. So, and I'm a big fan of not, I don't want to miss out on anything. And again, I think it's based on my disability because obviously when you're blind, you miss out on so much. So when you have an opportunity where you don't have to miss out on something, you want to take that opportunity, right? So yeah. I think that comes into it as all as my own sort of psychological thing. So when I'm doing my films, I like the big long shots for that reason, so that the audience gets to see everything, so they can focus on not just what the person's saying, but they can also look at the reactions of the other actors, and that should hopefully cause some, hilarity as well.
That makes a lot of sense when you describe it that way, because it seems like right now in cinema, you know, the single shot, the long shot, making a film that makes it look like one shot only is kind of the hit thing to do, from like Birdman to 1917.
Yeah, I've not seen 1917, but I watched Birdman and I loved Birdman. I thought that was just really clever. I mean, the actors were fantastic, but I thought the way it was made was super, super clever, really intelligent. The soundtrack really helped it as well, because sound can be so important to a film, music. I mean, to make it come alive, and the drum soundtrack was just outstanding. But I really enjoyed that film, and I thought that was really clever, and the way they made it work was super, super smart. I actually saw an interview with Emma Stone, and she's like, there was one scene where Michael Keaton and Edward Norton are talking on the stage, and then Emma Stone comes in and says one line and then walks off, and she's like, it's an 8-minute take, and she's like, I'm standing there just petrified. If I get my timing wrong, or if I don't do a good line, I've just ruined like a brilliant take and 8 minutes worth of work, and everything is just down the drain. So yeah, I can understand her apprehension, because the second scene in my particular film goes for about 8 or 9 minutes, and that is essentially one take. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing, I'm standing in the background listening to the actors, and when we're at about 7 minutes, all I'm saying in my head is, don't stuff this up, just keep it going, because this is a keeper, I don't want to waste this, just keep it going. And luckily, with all the rehearsals and stuff I put them through, they killed it. So yeah, very happy. But I can understand people's apprehension when they're filming those sorts of films.
Well, it was interesting too, in that scene that you're talking about in your film, you know, I timed it. It was an 8-minute scene with one cut about halfway through.
Yeah.
And it was a reaction shot of the wonderful old man.
Yeah, he's good, Phil. I've worked with Phil a few times now, and whenever I need like a pompous, arrogant, moron old man, he does it to a I don't know what he's like in real life, but in acting, he does that role so well. So every time I need that kind of a character now, I just call him up. I don't even bother opening that up for auditions. I just call up Phil and say, do you want to do this? And he's like, yeah, sure. So because he does do that role really, really well. Just jerk of a character. He does it so nicely.
So it's good to know that when you call the actors you work with, they still pick up the phone.
Well, yes. Yeah. For the most part, there's a few that, there's a few lawsuits pending, but I'm not legally obliged to discuss any of those. So we'll just talk about the nice ones.
Perfect. So the film we're talking about is your latest mockumentary film called How to Treat Women. And I've heard it said that people write what they know. And hopefully this film wasn't something that you know or part of a court-ordered mandate.
well, I mean, if you've obviously seen the film, as the last scene might suggest, the lawyers might be getting involved sometime soon, you know. At the end of the day, Chris, I'm a 38-year-old, blind, single, straight male. So, I mean, I was perfect to write a film about feminism. It seems the perfect choice for me to do that. So absolutely. I thought we'll take the subject of feminism and we'll tear it apart from every angle and see what comes up. So yeah.
I love the way you start the film, and it starts the way that you absolutely think it should, where you're talking about, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but I just like the way that you approach the subject, the way that you almost do. And then there's almost that record scratch moment. And the is it Savannah, the actress in that scene?
Yeah.
Her facial reaction is priceless. It's just like that is comedy right there. It's not as much as the performance of the, you know, of your performance, but her response that makes the scene even funnier.
Yeah, no. She it was the first time I've worked with her as an actor, and I've known her for a little while because she does acting, obviously, professionally, but she's also at university studying marketing. So she does some of my marketing stuff for me as well.
Nice.
And so I've known her for a while, and she's a bit of a fiery character, Savannah. So when I had this role, because it requires a reasonably fiery young lady, so when I had the role, I thought, I'll get her in for an audition and just see how she goes. You know, I wasn't sure if she'd do a good job or a bad job. And she came into the audition and she crushed it. The thought of abusing people was very, very good for her. So she ran with it and did a sterling job. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Where in the world did you get that fantastic Hawaiian shirt for Toby, who is probably the worst character in the film? Let's just be honest.
It was actually when I was auditioning for that role. he came in. He was actually the first one to come in. And I felt sorry for the other guys that came in after him, just couldn't – I mean, he hit it out of the park with the audition. And so the other guys I kind of felt bad for, because I'm like, well, I've kind of already got my guy in the back of my head. I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're going to have to be really good, because Jackson came in and he crushed it. So, yeah, but actually when he came in for the audition, he said to me, how do you want me to play it? You know, should I be awkward or should I be dumb? Or I said, look, you need to think of it like this. You're the dumbest footballer on the team, and I'm your coach. So that's how you need to approach it. You're the dumbest footballer there is. And he's like, okay, I can do that. I know a few of them, he said. So, and that's how he approached it. And, yeah, I thought he was great. And as far as that shirt goes, I'll have you know, Chris, that's one of my own collection, my own personal collection. Because when I was a younger man in my late teens and early 20s, I went through a Hawaiian shirt phase.
Nice.
And I thought they were very fantastic. And to be honest, if it was appropriate to still wear them, I would, to be honest, because, you know, I think they're great. You know, bit of creativity. But, yeah, I haven't worn that. That shirt's been in the cupboard for like 15 years. And I finally got a reason to pull it out. And it was because I said to him, I'm like, I want for your costume, you know, I want to do something a little bit out there. You got to look like a real dumbass. You just have to. I mean, you'd have to look like the biggest dead shit there is. And so I said, what have you got clothing wise that we could see? He's like, I'm not too sure. I said, well, I've got a shirt I reckon would suit. So I kind of forced him to wear that particular shirt. So, yeah, it's a good one.
I'm glad to know that you went through the Hawaiian shirt phase as well. I don't know what it is about the late teens, early 20s, but man, I had so many Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, I had about half a dozen, and I liked them, man, because they were comfortable. Like I say, it's a bit of brightness and creativity, and you know, that's always a good thing. So, but sadly now you're abused when you walk down the street and you wear one of those.
Well, and it's since you're hitting the gym, you don't need to wear them as much, because I wore them for the nice reason of hiding your gut.
Yeah, well, actually, because I used to be a bit overweight when I was younger, and I did notice, because I tried it on myself to see if it still fit me, and it is a couple of sizes too big now, so that was a nice little ego boost. So absolutely. I was like, oh, well, that's good. Yeah.
So when you go in to write and produce this new film, was there anything that you wanted to do differently or experiment with on this film?
Well, not really experiment. It's more of a case of, so I knew I wanted to do a mockumentary about feminism. So then it's about how do I want to tackle it? So what sort of format of the mockumentary? Because, I mean, there's so many different styles of, you know, mockumentary filmmaking that you can do. You know, I mean, you could do voiceover, you could do all kinds of different things. So I thought to myself, I want to do it sort of in a segment type. So that's why we've got the four different segments of, you know, encouragement, communication, equal rights, and then contact. So that I thought if we have the four separate segments, then it's all very nice and clear and nice and neat, if that makes sense. So I thought that that's the way I'm going to go when I'm writing it. So that that's sort of once I've got those two things in my head, it all sort of comes together pretty quickly after that. So, yeah.
Nice. It, was physical comedy a new direction, or was that just something that I hadn't seen as much in the previous films? And I'm thinking of the arrest scene.
So Serene, the actress in that, I'd worked with her a couple of times before, and I knew she'd done some stunt work. And I wanted that to be like real over the top, because the more over the top that scene is, the funnier it is. So I said to her, are you cool with, you know, being sort of beaten up a little bit? And she's like, yeah, no, that's not a problem. Stunt performers are strange, strange people, but they are, man. Anybody will tell you. They thrive on like being hit by cars and beaten up. They're an odd group of people. Can I set you on fire? Yeah, great. Set me on fire. Anyway, so I said to her, are you cool if we beat you up a little bit? And she's like, yeah, no, that's not a problem. That's all good. And so it was hard to find a male stunt performer who sort of got the joke, because that sort of scene is like a training video type of a situation. I needed the actor, the male actor who played the police officer, to be real sort of stilted, if that makes sense. So, and Shannon sort of got what I was after, so he was able to do that for me. But, and he's also a stunt performer as well, so it was I enjoyed doing that. It was a lot of fun. It took a little bit of time to sort of choreograph it out, so because we've got to make it all safe and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, but once we got it all sort of figured out how we were going to do it, it worked really well. I thought it was it turned out quite funny.
I was surprised when you sent me the link to the movie, because I think I was sitting on the couch last weekend and you were just filming then. So I mean, production and post-production's fast.
Our pre-production goes for about 3 months. Because of all the organizing, obviously costumes and makeup and props and rehearsing the actors is a big thing as well. So yeah, that takes a long time. And then, yeah, it's just filming, editing, and up on the website as quickly as possible. So yeah, there's no mucking around with me. So yeah, it's all business.
It's all business. So kind of bring me into the room when you're doing rehearsals. I mean, is everyone sitting around a table? Are you just working through the script? Is everyone together, or are you one-on-one?
No, it's usually, so with this one, it was everybody had their own sort of segment, like I said earlier. So everybody sort of comes in their little group. So for example, with the first scene, you've got the mother, father, and daughter. So they'll come in. We'll sit around the table and go through it a few times until I'm happy with their delivery. So, because that's number one for me. So we go through it until their delivery is what I would consider to be spot on. And then I'll show them how the scene is going to be staged and how we're going to do it. And then we'll rehearse it again as if we're filming it and get that part of it right. So yeah, the first half of it is all around a table, just going through the lines. And then the second half is actually staging it and performing the scene.
Wow. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's how I've always, I mean, no one told me to do it like that. I just figured that's the best way to do it. Because I mean, the number one thing is to make sure the performance is correct. So yeah, I won't move on to the actual staging of the scene and showing them how I want it to be filmed and staged until the performances are correct. So that takes as long as it takes. And then, yeah, we can then move on. So yeah, because that's number one. Obviously, I'm always of the belief, I mean, everybody's gone to see a movie at the cinema and the acting is so atrocious that it just takes you completely out of the story. You know, it could be a great premise but there's just a performance in it. Just you're like, oh my God. So I don't want that to happen with my film. So I make sure that the actors are absolutely spot on with their delivery and their performance. That's really important to me.
Yeah. And one of the things I don't think you can script is how actors feed off each other. So the married couple in the encouragement section, I mean, they felt like a married couple.
Well, that's just all the rehearsals, because, I mean, we go through that a lot. And, I mean, I drive actors a little bit crazy, I think, because I'm really pedantic with that sort of stuff. So, and I said to them, like, when I was actually writing that scene, I wrote it as just one parent, and then I knew that I was going to have two parents, and then I just sort of divided it up afterwards. So that's how I wrote that. So I wrote it as one person, and that way it would get, when you divide it up as to two people, mm-hmm. it should theoretically have the feel of it being one in the same, which they absolutely were. They were like two peas in a pod, you know, they were one in the same. And that's what I wanted. So I wrote that as just one character, and then just went through the script and divided it sentence by sentence. So he has that sentence, she has that sentence, then he mm-hmm. has that sentence, and she has that sentence. So that's how that was written.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's completely fascinating.
I knew that's how I wanted the delivery to be. I wanted two parents, but they needed to sound the same. So mm-hmm. to do that, you just write it as one character and then just divide it. That's how I went about it. So, yeah.
So one of the things that I really loved, you know, obviously I'm on the other side of the world, and I love the behind the scenes clips that you're sharing on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Just with the actors, and like, you're chugging Red Bull, no one can stop me. And I mean, how did that bring the cast and crew together while you're filming? I mean, were they having a good time with it?
Well, they didn't have a choice. So, you know, you're going to do a behind the scenes video. Okay. So, you know, that's just, no, I did tell them beforehand, but, and yes, you are quite right. The crew, more than the cast, the crew have banned me from drinking Red Bull, because apparently I get overexcited and my instructions come at like triple speed and no one can keep up with me. So they said I'm not allowed to drink Red Bull. But as I rightly said, no one's the boss of me. I'm the boss of me. So I'll just – and again, I'm a child, so I'll just drink it all the more now because you told me I can't. So, you know, that's my mentality. It was actually Savannah, who does my marketing. Mm-hmm. She said, why don't we – you know, we always do photos and stuff like that. But she's like, why don't we get a little grab from each actor and each crew, like some of the crew members and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff, and post that up as we go as a little behind-the-scenes sort of documentary. And if people jump onto YouTube, we actually put them all together and made a little YouTube goes for about 6 minutes, little behind-the-scenes little YouTube documentary. So if people – jump on the Beer Nuts Productions YouTube channel, they can watch it. So if they missed it through Instagram, they can still watch it through YouTube.
Yeah, that's awesome. Again, it's really one of those things where I think when you're independent, when you are the captain of your own ship, I mean, it's when you can do stuff like that and bring people onto the set, it's really cool.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I think that's one of the advantages of what I do, because mm-hmm. like I said, you know, there's nobody telling me what I can and can't do. I mean, I see other films, like big budget Hollywood films and things like that, and they're so like the actors can't sort of post on social media behind the scenes photos for mm-hmm. legal reasons and all this sort of stuff, and they can't talk about certain things, and you know, they're very restricted because of the lawyers and all of that sort of stuff. Well, with me, I'm like you said, I'm the sort of boss man. So if I want to do a behind the scenes thing, I can. You know, there's nothing stopping me from doing that. It's actually the second time we did one last year. When I did one of the audio pieces last year, mm-hmm. and we did a little. It's both a sketch and a behind the scenes documentary.
Oh, yeah,
and that one goes for a bit longer. I think I might have sent you a copy. It's mm-hmm. on YouTube. So yeah, and. It starts off with like a bit of a sketch, and then there's a few little sketches in there, but it's predominantly a serious documentary and just going through how we go about, you know, recording down one of our audio pieces, and also, you know, just a few questions about, because obviously my disability, how mm-hmm. they find working with a blind guy and all that sort of stuff, things that people would probably find interesting. So again, that's up on our YouTube channel as well. So people can have a look at that. So all that's obviously completely free to watch through YouTube. So yeah.
Nice. So what's been the response to this film so far? I mean, it hasn't been out very long, but are people digging it?
Yeah, no, it's been really good, actually. People have been laughing a lot, which is the reaction I'm after, so that's good. And, I tell you what I do like, though, is everybody seems to have their favorite either scene or character, and that's a good sign for me, because if everybody's got a different favorite, then that means there's a nice spread, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. that's something that's very pleasing to me. You know, some people like certain scenes better than others, which is great because it, you know, it means that if you put it all together, it means that all of it's entertaining, you know? So, yeah.
Do you do screenings or do you show them in theaters at all, or is it just straight to the website?
No, it's pretty much straight to the website. So when I write my scripts, they're incredibly tight. So essentially what you see on the screen is what's been written. There's absolutely zero waste because, I can't afford to. This is the basic reason. I mean, I can't afford to be spending 3 or 4 days filming a bunch of scenes that I'm not going to use. I mean, that seems like a total waste of time, money, and effort. So when I'm writing my scripts, they're super, super tight. So, yeah, it's essentially what's on the page is what goes on the screen, and that's what people end up seeing. So there's no real wriggle room at all with me.
Yeah. So you've been working with Savannah with marketing. Have you been learning anything new in terms of marketing Beer Nuts Productions to Australia and the world?
That's a good question. Have I learned anything new? I probably have. I'd like to think so. Marketing isn't my strength. I've never studied it. I don't know much about it. It's something that I've struggled with ever since I started my company. It's something that's always been a bit of a struggle. I've tried to learn as much as I can, and so I mean, I've learned things about social media that I would never have known otherwise, and just things like, I agree with you when you said, you know, you enjoyed the little behind-the-scenes videos and stuff. I agree. I think that's a really nice and smart idea, and it's little things like that because I'm so focused on making the actual film itself, but things like taking photos and doing little videos and stuff like that, it's just not something that's in my brain. So, yeah, I need somebody like Savannah on board to go, hey, listen, let's get a quick couple of photos, or let's do a little video. While somebody's getting their makeup done, we'll just do a little video. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff that I find really, really helpful. So, yeah.
What's next? We're going to talk in 6 months. And what is the film that you're releasing in 6 months?
Well, actually, it'll be less than 6 months because we're starting pre-production on the next one just next week. So yeah, because this one's been actually really successful because basically my business model, which probably isn't a smart business model, but it's what I do, is essentially, you know, the more downloads I get means the quicker I can make the next project. And this one's been really popular, so which means I can make the next one a lot sooner. So, nice. The next one goes into pre-production next week. So, we're straight back into it. So I'm doing media for the current one and pre-production for the next one at the same time, which is super cool. So,
Double Red Bull.
Yeah, there'll be so much Red Bull that, I'll be without me, they'd go out of business, I think. But,
or the film business in general.
Well, yeah, so I don't sleep for months at a time. It's rather unhealthy, but it works, you know? So that
show, What We Do in the Shadows, is about you then.
Yeah, nobody wants to know what I do in the shadows. That's why I make sure it's in the shadows. And because if it was called What Goff Does Out in Public, then, you know, we'd all be in trouble. So, yes,
that's a different documentary.
It is.
So what's inspiring you lately when it comes to movies or music or other forms of media?
I tell you what I want to watch. I haven't seen it yet because I'm a big fan of Jim Carrey. I know that's very cliche, I really like his work. I really do. And I like I do enjoy Dumb and Dumber and all that sort of stuff. But, like, I Love You, Philip Morris, I thought was an amazing film. The Truman Show was an amazing film. I mean, he's done some really wonderful work. And I haven't watched yet, and I am eager to see it, and I will see it in the next week or two, is the TV series he's done called Kidding. Mm-hmm. So it's on Showtime, I believe, in America, and I've not seen it yet. Apparently season two comes out soon, so I'll watch season one and then season two because the trailers for it look really, really interesting and really good, so I'm eager to watch that. So because I like, it looks obscure, and I like obscure-type things because I'm a reasonably obscure type of a fellow. So, I like things that are a bit, you know, left of center, let's say. And the same goes for when I'm watching stand-up comedy, for example. – you know, I'm a big fan of those guys that do something a little bit different. So singing comedians or improvisation comedians and stuff like that. I much prefer watching that than a traditional stand-up sort of person. So, yeah, I like things that are slightly a little bit left of center.
Have you seen Avenue 5 yet?
No, I haven't.
It's a comedy set on a spaceship with Hugh Laurie, who played Dr. House in the show and other things. Yep. And he plays the captain. And it's got some of the most awkward scenes in there. But just some incredible, just like almost just deadpan moments where you aren't sure whether to cringe or just bust up laughing.
Is it English? Because that sounds like an English type of a thing.
It has to be, because it's very almost Monty Python-esque in some ways without the foot drop or the animation.
Because the English do awkward. I mean, Ricky Gervais is king of awkward comedy. So, I mean, the original season of The Office, at sometimes you just had to sort of switch it off for a minute because you were just, your face was contorted with just so much cringing because it was just so awkward. So, I mean, the English do awkward comedy better. I mean, if you even go back to something like Fawlty Towers, something like that, you know, I mean, that's classic awkward English comedy. So, yeah, that they do that better than most, I reckon. So, yeah.
Let me pitch it this way. Imagine a ship so big that it has its own orbit.
Yes.
The poop pipe bursts into space, and therefore a stream of shit is orbiting the ship. And they have these giant windows, and they can see what's going on.
That does sound like my kind of thing, so yes. I tell you one thing I do want to watch as well, again, and it's a stage thing, is that it's not come to Australia yet as far as I know, but Avenue Q with the swearing puppets.
That's
my kind of deal as well. Because, see, again, you know, I was the only person who thought that the Happy Time Murders was just the funniest film of all time, because I'm obsessed with the Muppets and just swearing puppets. It's, and puppets having sex and whatnot. It's just like, it's comedy gold for me. And you know a funny fact about it as well, which somebody told me and I looked it up and it did make me laugh, was Melissa McCarthy is the only person in history to be both nominated for an Oscar and a Razzie in the same year. Because awesome. she was nominated for a Raspberry Award for the Happy Time Murders, and then she was nominated for an Oscar for the film where she was playing, I think it was an author. So she was nominated for both in the same year, which I think is fantastic.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but was it her or someone else that went to the actual Razzies and picked up the award?
No, that wasn't her. No, but yeah, someone you're quite did. Correct. And it was an actress. It was a female actress. I just can't remember who it was. But they made a whole speech and everything. It was very, very funny. I do recall that taking place, but it wasn't her. I just remember on the Oscars telecast, Simon, my production man, he told me that when there was a shot of Melissa McCarthy and she did not win the Oscar, there was a shot of her face and she was less than impressed. And he thought that was very funny because she wasn't doing very good at hiding her emotions, apparently. I mean, you know, if you're going to go to something like that, you just got to smile and clap and play the game, man, because, you just got to. That's just the rules. You know what I mean?
Or you just go up there and talk about artificially inseminating cows.
Well, you could do that. All right, if ever I win the Oscar, I think I should get up there and do my dead hooker joke like I told you earlier.
That will be the first time in history that you would actually literally see the hook come in and pull you off the stage.
the band won't be able to play fast enough.
Well, Goff, what question have I not asked you that you're dying to answer?
Well, I'm a Sagittarius. I enjoy long walks along the beach and holding hands by sunset.
That's nice. And your mother's maiden name? No. The name of your first dog?
And all of that. Suddenly turned into a eHarmony all of a sudden. So good.
Or identity theft. You know, either way, it's the same thing.
Well, yeah, in it though, but yes, maybe that should be online dating. Might be a nice mockumentary subject title for a future film, perhaps.
That would probably be really hilarious. The man totally confuses which way to swipe.
Yeah, well, we've all done that when we've been drunk. Don't lie. I mean, you have.
This is my show. I don't have to explain myself.
That's very, very true. That's very true indeed. Hopefully, the folks that are listening to this wonderful train wreck of an interview will hit up the Beer Nuts Productions website, and hopefully they enjoy the film as much as you. So, yeah, just beernutsproductions.com. That's where people can go to watch the new film, which is How to Treat Women, which is hopefully a very funny mockumentary all about feminism. So, yeah, I just hope that people download a copy and that they get a big laugh out of it.
Fantastic, Goff. Always a pleasure to talk with you. You always make me laugh. I appreciate that.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. No, I appreciate you having me on the show and being such a generous host and laughing at my nonsense.
Of course, because there is no other kind that I would rather laugh at than nonsense.
It's very true. I agree with that sentiment. Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much, Goff, for being on the show. It is always fun to have a recurring friend of the show. Be sure to check out the previous 4 interviews with Goff to learn more of his story and an insight into his brain. Be sure to head to beernutsproductions.com for more of his salty brand of irreverent hilarity. I know I always have a good laugh. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.